Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Roll Up, the official Phil Singer Games podcast. I am your co-host, Sam Fain, joined, as always, by the tournament master himself, Mr. Todd Jerschel. Todd, how are you?
I'm doing good. Coming off a fun weekend there, at least on the Sunday with our second holiday kickoff virtual event.
Idolmania was running wild.
Who knew it preceded Hulkamania? Well, I guess some people did. I did not know that until Mr. Idol informed us. So
yeah. No, it was a lot of fun. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. But yeah, coming off of that, it seems like people were very happy. And you know, lots of good comments on the message boards, which is always nice. And I unfortunately haven't been keeping up to date on the Facebook group. So I'm not quite sure, you know, what people have said over there, but I would imagine there's been some chatter, there as well. Todd's going to keep us updated on all that, I think, but,
definitely some mentions of it over there. I think people were very excited to see Austin. It was cool. Yeah. It was good to have a legend there, and a legend of his caliber too is definitely very exciting.
Yeah. It's funny because, when I think of Austin Idol, I do usually immediately think of Memphis. Sure. But when, you know, doing some research before the interview and trying to just cover all my bases, you know, you realize that, you know, he was on top wherever he went. And, you know, I guess the definition of on top can vary from person to person, but I certainly consider it to be somebody who's in the mix, somebody who's main eventing cards, whether or not, you know, that means they're main eventing, you know, one of the satellite towns or whatever, like he did in the Northeast, for WWWF, or if that means that he is, you know, main eventing and holding the top title in the territory, like he did in Georgia and Alabama and of course Memphis. You read about the stuff that he did in Georgia and Alabama. And the truth of the matter is that he was just as, I think, revolutionary and iconic in those territories while he was there as he was in Memphis. It's just that I think that there's, for as much footage does exist from Georgia Championship Wrestling, there's a lot of stuff we don't have from Georgia Championship Wrestling.
Yeah.
And there's hardly anything we have from like Southeastern and Continental in Alabama. Like that is a territory that is just sorely lacking in available footage. And then of course, Memphis, you can find it, but it's also not necessarily, well, I don't want to say it's not easily accessible because it is. I mean, you can just go to YouTube and you can find pretty much, you know, anything you want, but it's a varying quality and you might have to kind of like really, really work pretty hard to, you know, put things in order, if you will. So I think that, you know, he's someone that doesn't necessarily benefit from the plethora of like Mid-Atlantic footage that you know, WWE Network offered us, or, you know, obviously all the WCW and WWF footage that's available to us. So, but that said, it was such an honor, frankly, to get the chance to, you know, be the one to lead that interview. And I was so glad that people chimed in with their questions. There were a lot of great questions that were asked and I tried to get to all of them. He was great and generous and very knowledgeable. We had a couple of little technical hiccups, but nothing that, you know, derailed the interview by any means, just as a little connection stuff here and there. But, it was awesome. I loved it. And I think everybody should check out AustinIdolLive.com. He's, you know, got some really cool stuff over there, including merchandise, obviously, including, as he mentioned, at the con, you can basically buy half an hour one-on-one with Austin Idol, $250. You know, you can be the interviewer.
There you go.
Just really cool. And of course, obviously still involved with the business, working with NWA, you know, managing Tyrus and who's the NWA television champion right now. And it's funny because, you know, he kind of disappeared for a while. And there were some people that, you know, even wondered if he had died. And it wasn't until maybe, you know, honestly, it was late 2000s, early 2010s when he kind of sort of, you know, resurfaced and started doing interviews and that sort of stuff. And then eventually, you know, made some appearances here and there and, you know, has been working with NWA and I think was on an AEW Dark episode at one point as well. So, he's back out there doing it, you know, working on the mic, and he truly is one of the best at it. He's incredible.
Oh yeah. Oh, he's fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. And it was definitely cool to see, you know, his, you know, positive reaction to seeing the artwork, you know,
yeah,
both of the cards there. I think, yeah, and the Iron Mike Picard card that was the con exclusive card. You know, seeing that, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, how old that
yeah. Is. Yeah. He seemed to be very pleased with that. And that's a perfect segue really, because, you know, we do have some card announcements to talk about. And obviously the big one being the reveal of the Austin Idol card, which we knew was coming from the announcement of Idol participating in the con,
yeah.
But to see the artwork, you know, to have the confirmation kind of that, was really cool. And I mean, I'm going to be completely honest. Mike's not here to muzzle me, but other than Jerry Lawler, there are really not many names that you could get from Memphis, especially, you know, like post 78, sure. That would be as big, as impactful, as headlining as Austin Idol. So in my mind, if you're talking from, you know, the Jerry Jarrett years, post 1978 in Memphis, we've got superstar Bill Dundee. Like, we know we've already got him. You know, we've got a black and white card. We can assume there will be a color update for him. And other than that, and other than Lawler, I think Austin Idol is probably the most important name. So, yeah. You know, it's kind of like to get the headliner, if you will, up front, potentially. Maybe there's some surprises down the road, is pretty damn cool. And I think it's going to be a great addition, because as I was saying earlier, he worked with so many other territories, and there's so many guys that we have in the game already that he's worked with. You know, he's a tag team champions with Mass Superstar. You know, obviously on the black and white side, you've got, you know, Tommy Rich, who may or may not, you know, you never know what's going to happen, obviously, with this set. But there's just a good deal of talent that he worked with that we've already got in the game. Of course, Eddie Gilbert being another name. I meant to ask him a question about Eddie Gilbert, because I've heard him say such nice complimentary things about Eddie Gilbert, and I wanted to kind of pick his brain about that, but alas, we only had so much time.
Yeah. But yeah, I think, you know, between, you know, a couple of the guys that we've kind of released over the years, you know, I guess Jackie Fargo, the other Gilberts, you know, there's a couple other guys you can kind of put along together with this and have like a really great, you know, Memphis style fed there. I think it's going to be a ton of fun. And then yeah I know Travis had those bootlegs before. I'm sure those will probably make their way to quite a number of promoters, right? Feds as well. So
yeah, high quality stuff. I remember when he first released those, like what, like almost 20 years ago, I think. And I had the PDFs of those that he did.
The ones he just released here for Galacticon, the new versions there were great. So
those are stellar. Unfortunately, I don't have physical copies. I just have the PDF. But and then of course the Iron Mike McCord card, which, you know, pays tribute to his time, his short amount of time, but time nonetheless in WWWF, where he was being built to be quite the attraction. You know, he was main eventing with Pedro, and he was, you know, he was doing some really cool stuff up there. Vince McMahon Sr. apparently loved him. The famous story goes there was a big snowstorm, and he was like, I don't like this, and decided to give Vince his notice and head it off. But still, it's really, really cool to have that card, really cool to have that persona. And I know that some people have already talked about using them as separate, you know, separate wrestlers, which I think is also a couple
people talking about that. Yeah.
You know, same thing I know with like Trooper and Patriot, you know, it's like, you know, using them as separate identities. So, which is totally, totally cool. But, we're so fortunate, and we talked a little bit about it with the Legends team. Anytime we can have kind of those, a peek at early in someone's career or see the progression of someone's career, and getting that opportunity with Mike McCord and then into Austin Idol, I think is really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And then on the indies side, we had the announcement of Masha Slamovich.
Great name, by the way, I gotta say.
Oh yeah. Russian Dynamite. For those that don't know, Masha is a competitor from Russia. She spends most of her time in the northeast of the United States these days. She's made quite a name for herself, especially over the past year, has, you know, worked on Impact, NWA Power, AEW. She's really kind of made the rounds of kind of the televised, alternatives, if you will, to mm-hmm. WWE, as well as being a standout on the indies, beyond number of other independent companies that aren't coming to mind right now. She recently had a match with Daniel Garcia, and has wrestled Edith Surreal.
For those playing the roll up drinking game, that was the first Daniel Garcia reference of the pod. So there you go.
How many more can I get in?
I know the Uncharted Territories has their drinking game coming out. I guess we need one too.
We should step it up. Just awesome competitor, tons of attitude. Doesn't mind, taking some lumps through tables and doors and, getting a little busted open. She had that Soviet death match with Edith Surreal for Camp Leapfrog, which was, I didn't know what to expect when I watched the match. And it was pretty brutal. And one of the, honestly, as crazy as it sounds, one of the most brutal spots of the match was seeing her get like slammed into a snowdrift. Cause all I could think is like, when you've got like packed cold snow and getting like that's not an easy bump.
No, I don't think so. Yeah.
But she's cool. She's, honestly, in some ways she's got sort of like a Stone Cold vibe to her, where she's clearly kind of like the anti-hero flipping the audience off, but they get behind her, they cheer her anyway. And she's a great name. And I think the perfect first name for this international themed Women of the Indies set.
Absolutely. Yeah, actually, I like recently that Beyond did name the show after her. It was their annual beach show. It was Borscht at the Beach, yeah, which I thought was fantastic. Yeah, I love what those guys do. So,
yeah.
But it's good to see. Yeah, good to see. I'm very glad to have her in the game. I know there's somebody I think it signed last year. It was a possibility for last year's set, but I think really kind of her name grew a lot this year and with the theme this year. Absolutely, definitely home run name to put in first there. And, we kind of went through, we know for the most part, I think who's going to be in this set. There's kind of like one name that we're still kind of like back and forth on, still trying to get a hold of somebody there, but yeah, I think we're pretty fingers crossed there, but I think we're pretty close to that. And I think it'll be a really fun set with the Women of the Indies this year.
Yeah. I think it's going to be it'll be very unique. And I think that people will be surprised with sort of the breadth of some of the names that are coming, and some of the places that they've wrestled and titles that they've held.
Yep.
But that's all I'll say. I'm contractually obligated to say no more. in addition to that, we also, of course, know that we've got a brand new FTR set coming. 10-card set,
yes. 10-card set. So originally 8, but then, just the way things, in the writing process, Rob came and was like, it would really help out if we had these two extra cards in there. So, but it made a lot of sense. And I think this is, kind of continuation of the storyline and kind of wrapping up a good portion of it. There's maybe a couple little questions that might still be lingering afterwards, but it really sets you up nicely to start an FTR Fed. And I know with, this is Rob's kind of signing off with this set and kind of setting it forward for us, you and me, Sam, to kind of take over. I think it leaves us in a very good spot to do that next year.
Yeah. We've kind of had a couple of small discussions, but I think, with what Rob has done and where, he's kind of headed to leave things for us, it gives us the opportunity to really run with a couple of things that we've already sort of talked about. So it'll be a lot of fun to pick up. But at the same time, I'm really looking forward to seeing how Rob ties up some of this stuff and looking forward to seeing the rest of the roster. As of this recording, I know some people probably heard at the con, Rob said that he was going to send me that booklet, early draft of the booklet, so I could take a look at it. And as of yet, I have not read anything, so I don't know anything other than what everyone else knows. And I'm really looking forward to the rest of it because I have enjoyed what he's done with it thus far quite a bit.
Well, you do know one more thing. You do know what the teaser is for next week is going to be. You have seen the artwork for that. So we do have a tag team coming next week, which
that's
is going
right.
to be a lot of fun. So
Yes. People are going to love that, I think. But not to get ahead of ourselves, because we did, of course, get an official announcement for Witch, and Witch is an enigmatic newcomer who has been accused by the natives of her planet of being pure evil. What did she do to earn such disdain? As a result, Witch has been run off her home planet with warnings to others not to trust her and her temptations. Will FTR take these warnings seriously, or has Sunny Rocket opened his doors to a monster? What a teaser. Perfect teaser.
Good teaser. Great teaser. Great teaser.
Love the artwork. I love the fact that we're getting, you know, more women talent for FTR. And I think, you know, I know a little bit about where she might be headed, so to speak. And I'm really looking forward to, you know, to that, you know, as a player, not, you know, not necessarily as, you know, good creator or anything. So,
and I'll say there's another little twist to her card art that hasn't been you know mentioned yet, and I have a feeling it's going to open up a whole new thing for upcoming, you know, cards and, you know, bootlegs. I'm going to leave it at that. When you get the card, you'll definitely know what I mean.
Nice. Very cool. Yeah, and you know, I know kind of a little bit of what's ahead for her. So I'm looking forward to seeing what people think of that story and where it's headed, because I think it's got some potential to really, you know, up the ante for a couple of things within FTR. But yeah, it's funny because in a way that's it. But in a way, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, that's a lot. And in addition to that, of course, we've got the stickers, which will be, you know, on their way for people who attended the con. We've got the, you know, the first in what will be a series of stickers.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us a little bit more about that, Todd? Because that was kind of your idea, and you put that together.
Yeah. So I mean, I wanted to have something else that was kind of like a fun thing to have as part of this. You know, I know. You know, it's kind of like the little, you know, collectible stickers that you can kind of find in different things is kind of like a, you know, another fun thing I've been kind of seeing other places do. And, you know, we used to have the stickers that we sold that were fairly popular, actually, you know, with the original game ad and whatnot. So I thought that would be something that would be fun to incorporate. So they have these will be available for sale. They're not going to be exclusives, but we want to make sure you guys are the first ones to get it, those who came to the convention. So the first one will be a Philsinger Games sticker. You know, and I'm sure there'll be some other ones you probably expect coming out, you know, in the near, you know, the near future there. But yeah, I think we can get really creative with it. If people really like it, I think this could be something that's a fun thing. And, you know, you'll be able to, you know, throw on your Philsinger Games box of cards and whatnot, or, you know, whatever setup you have, you know, you can display these. And I think it's just a fun little extra thing to have, and or you can just collect them. And, you know, they said we're only printing a certain number of them, and, you know, over time, you know, maybe these can be collectibles as well. I mean, the ones that we had that were left over from 20 some odd years ago, I mean, one of them just went for $25 in the auction there. So yeah, having the whole series of that, I think will be pretty cool. So we'll see what people think. You know, I think expect these to kind of come out over the course of the next few virtual cons, and then maybe, you know, time for Galacticon next summer, we can do something a little different and fun for that.
Yeah, I'm excited. I like you said, I think it'll be a lot of fun. Just recently, I build Gunpla, which is, you know, short for Gundam plastic models. Mm-hmm. And there's a store in Florida that I order from sometimes, because there's a store here in Chicago, which is great. So I can just, you know, go to the storefront. But, you know, sometimes their selection's a little bit limited. So I ordered something recently from the store from Florida, and they included this, you know, awesome sticker in it. And I just like, and I thought that was so cool. So I'm excited about, you know, getting that. And I have a Spike sticker. You know, and it was just included in a package that I ordered once upon a time. You know, it was just kind of stuck in the envelope. So I have one of those stickers from, you know, ages ago as well. And speaking of which, that sticker was one of the prizes for the tournaments. Because there were a round of tournaments, of course, at the con. What would a con be without tournaments? We had Indies Deathmatch Tournament, a Sentra Tournament, and a Legends Tournament, which the Legends Tournament I thought was cool. This was, whose idea was that? Was it your idea? It was probably your idea, wasn't it?
Uh, I I'm sure Troy had something to do with it as well. He's always helping me out with these. Yeah, I think we're trying to come up with some type of a theme for that. And yeah, I'm pretty sure Troy had some, was probably came up with the idea. I was like, oh no, that's a really good idea that we can do. It could be somebody else that I'm forgetting at this point, but that maybe has something to, maybe is another suggestion on the board. I think I put it out there. Hey, what do we want to do for Legends? Because there wasn't really anything obvious to do, because a lot of times I will theme it to the tournaments, to the sets that recently came out. Right. And we just released the Portland 4-pack, and I didn't think, I don't know if a Portland tournament's really gonna work, especially the number of people that would want to participate. So yeah, just world champions, and we included ones from the indie lines as well that were world champions in there. And in the end, it was Buddy Rogers that came out ahead of that.
Beat Kurt Angle.
Beat Kurt Angle. Yeah. So yeah. Mike Malinsky, he has not told me what prize he wants yet, but we'll get that from him. But yeah, also congratulations to TK, who won the Central Tournament with Ventross, nice. And Chris Blansett, who won the Deathmatch Tournament with Nick Effing Gage, beating Danny Havoc in the final. So yeah, he beat Matt Cardona pretty quickly in the first round. But
I did not participate in the Deathmatch or Central tournaments, mainly just because of time. Yeah.
Those were smaller tournaments too. Yeah,
we just, right. And I didn't get a chance to hear too much about them, but I'm sure that they were a lot of fun, especially with the roster in the Deathmatch set. And of course, it was fleshed out with a few other guys like Necro Butcher and Matt Cardona and Danny Havoc and some other folks. It sounds like it would have been a heck of a lot of fun. I would have loved to see the Deathmatch charts a little bit more in action. I loved during the interview segment with Zeke, I got to ask Zeke about the charts, because one of the things that I had mentioned is that I was considering doing kind of an even odd roll to decide if I would roll on the Deathmatch charts or not. And Zeke, of course, offered a wonderful explanation of why he chose to not have it be kind of left up to chance, that you would just automatically go to the charts, and made a lot of sense, and had me kind of reconsidering that I might not do that when I run those types of matches, because like he said, it's like you don't really see guys get thrown into the corner without there being a pane of glass or a barbed wire board or something there. You don't really see some of this stuff that you would see like in a normal match, or same thing with getting thrown into the ropes and that sort of stuff. There's always something involved, and I think he's absolutely right. And again, it's up to you, promoter. You do whatever you want and whatever suits your needs and your fed. But it's always it's always so much fun to get to talk to everybody, and I loved getting the chance to talk to Zeke about the Deathmatch set. And I loved getting to talk with the Legends crew. I felt like it was a good conversation. We covered some bases, and I know that there were, again, questions from the crowd, which we got to get to. And then Ty, of course, talking about, the upcoming women's set and just kind of ideas for that without teasing too much, and then wrapping things up with Rob about, the FTR set. So overall, yeah, it was a heck of a lot of fun, and I got to be Kurt Angle for a little while with the Legends tournament, so that was cool.
There you go.
Well, let me just say, Stu had Tyler Black, and there was a moment when we were in our bracket, and I was just sort of like, that Tyler Black card is stacked.
Oh, it's totally stacked. Yeah, and so we did for the perennial tournament. It was like, oh, if you won the indie one, you had to pick an indie guy, and everyone's like, yeah, you should probably pick Tyler Black. That's probably the guy you want.
Yeah.
So I thought he might do some damage.
It was a lot of fun, and I got to take Kurt Angle up against Tyler Black, and Angle ended up coming out on top, but it was a good match, and I had to survive, I think, two God's Last Gifts, which was a little, a bit of a nail biter. I think he actually missed the second one, so which gave me the chance to turn things around and beat him with the Olympic Slam. But a lot of fun as always, and I look forward to it was just fun to kind of stay in the outer room during the bulk of the first two tournaments and listen to the conversations that people were having. And yeah, it's just a great excuse to get together and talk about the game. And we've got another one of those great excuses coming up. Tell them all about it, Todd.
So yeah, our next kind of get together is something a little new, and it's on Friday, November 19th. At 8:30, we're going to do our first Filsinger Games game night, and we'll have some more details exactly how you can sign up for that and be part of it. It's going to be free. You just have to, you know, sign up, log, you know, for the Zoom meeting, and you know, you would need to submit the match that you want to run there. So you know, two people would get together to submit a match. It's got to be approved by the tournament master. And then at that point, you know, you help promote it on the boards. Like, yeah. And, I know I listened to, Grant, Pachoco's Filsinger Games fan podcast, on Monday. And he's like, oh, I think it was maybe spurred a little bit by the Kevin Butcher and Pete Beck, back and forth prior to Galacticon. And he's absolutely correct. Yeah, he's absolutely correct. It definitely got me thinking. He's like, oh, well, I know Sam and I have been talking a little while about doing something like this. And I know, you know, Troy and I have been talking, there's been talk for a while. And, you know, I was kind of thinking, well, how should we go about, you know, doing this? And I just thought that'd be a lot of fun. Just, you know, people, we have just a random different matches, at least for this first one, just to kind of test it out, see how things go. But, you know, just really kind of get into it, build it up a little, build up the matches going into it. You know, hopefully we have some fun, creative matches, some cool feuds across all different types of Filsinger Games products. I'm really interested to see what matches come out in the end.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny when we had Pariah on last week and we were talking about, you know, kind of just building a Fed with the breadth of the line, you know, taking all the wrestlers from all the game lines and just, you know, picking guys, which he's actually started. He started up a Fed on the boards, doing, you know, basically just that. And, that's kind of in a way what we're getting the opportunity to do on the 19th is just like take guys, you know, and build a card. And, I think, you know, promoters can call each other out, can, you know, bring guys to the table, throw promos up on the message board, you know, whatever they want to do. And then we can get to the game night and roll out the matches and see what happens and, you know, maybe get some bragging rights going and, you know, maybe try to break the Meltzer ratings. I don't know. which was actually devised by Jim Cornette and another guy whose name escapes me right now. And I'm sure somebody out there right now is screaming at their, you know, earbuds. It was so-and-so. Yeah. It was so-and-so, you idiot. And I'm like, yeah, I know. but anyway, it'll be a lot of fun. And one of the cool things too, is that I've seen some suggestions on the boards too for possibly doing, you know, other types of games. You know, the suggestion was even made at the con about doing like a Quiplash, which Grant had done at GalactCon. And then there was also suggestions for just like other types of, you know, COTG themed games, you know, like one that I really loved was try to guess a card based off the move set. Like you'd start at like level one offense. And you'd reveal that, and you keep going, like kind of like name that tune, you know?
Right. I can name that moves. Wrestler,
right? Which I thought was a great idea. I would love to do that because the thing is there are some guys that by the time you get to like level six or six on level one offense, you'll know who it is, you know, because there are guys that have like, you know, moves that are signatures there or whatnot. But then there are some folks that I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, unless you know the card makeup, which I know there are folks that do, it might take you until like, you know, the six move on level two offense or something, before you get like a hint of who it might be.
Sure.
So it's, I thought that would be a cool idea. So
just, that is kind of a fun idea. Fun. I like that.
You know, it can just be a lot of fun, which I think is something that we've, you know, post-con, people have sort of been celebrating on the board. I know Stu had a lovely post about, you know, just how wonderful it's been to have that sense of community and, you know, and share with each other. And, you know, it's been such a bright spot over the past 18 months or so. And I completely agree. So
I know,
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I know the faction was saying, he's like, yeah, I haven't been this engaged into everything since I was a kid, you know, playing it. I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool. You know, that, you know, I think it's kind of coming about everything in a little bit of a different way, you know, engaging with kind of where we are right now. I mean, yeah, we probably, most of us probably don't have the time to sit down and, you know, play out, you know, a, you know, 40 card, you know, game year in, you know, a weekend, like maybe we used to back in the day, but, but yeah, just, yeah, having, you know, having some interaction with other people, I think also just is bound to, you know, make it more, you know, engaging, you know, at least in a different way. Yeah.
Oh man, that just brings me back though, what you just said. I can remember when I was probably like 14 or 15, and especially over the summers, I could literally go through probably a 2-3 month, you know, game time span in like a weekend, you know, like extended week. Like start on Friday, and by Sunday night, you know, it's been 3 supercards later. You know? good times. I've been there. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And, I think that, you know, there's also other things to look forward to, down the pipeline with more virtual cons and of course, an in-person con as well.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. So, I mean, we are planning to do the perennial in January. I have a tentative date. I just got to make sure everybody else is kind of dialed in before we officially announce that one, but I have a good idea of how that one will run. And then we will do something in the springtime as well. But yeah, then we do have Galacticon coming to Chicago, and that is going to be the weekend of July 15th to the 17th. The 15th is the Friday. The main day is going to be the 16th. We're still trying to figure out a little bit of details of, you know, what exactly will be going on each day. But and definitely the big day would be Saturdays, but yeah, just make it a whole time. I'm planning some really cool things for the Friday, kind of a little tour of some fun things throughout the Chicago area. Maybe not the traditional sites, but you know, some things that I think that, you know, this community will really enjoy doing for the day. And then also I mentioned there the Cubs will be hosting the Mets in a 4-game series that weekend. So, you know, a lot of times with Galacticon, we always try to hit a baseball game, and yeah, that's one I'm definitely making. I've never been to Wrigley Field before, and being there for my Mets, I mean, that's pretty cool. So I'm looking forward to that as well.
That'll be a lot of fun. One of the best things, one of the things I love the most, I think, about Wrigley is that I have personally, I'm sure that there's stories out there, but personally, I've never seen anything other than just awesome treatment and camaraderie with like out of towners, except for maybe Cardinals fans. But
Cardinals fans.
But you know that, like, you know, whether it's the Mets or the Pirates or, you know, whoever else might be in town or something, you know, even the Brewers, like, it's, you know, I there's always just such just people having fun. So a game at Wrigley is almost, I think, required for any baseball fan.
Is a night game acceptable, or do you have to do the day game? That's the only thing I'm trying to decide, you know, because there's a Thursday night game and a Friday afternoon game. Now there's some other stuff, and there's also a Sunday afternoon game too, which they could kind of work. The Saturday one's not going to work because we're going to be doing the con. But yeah, I'm trying to figure out, like, you know, Thursday night actually would fit the schedule the best, but I'm like, should I really be there for a day game though? I don't know. That's the hard part.
I don't know. I, you know, one thing I will say too is that, you know, in addition to the baseball, before I say that, I will go back and say I think it's acceptable either way. Okay. There's definitely a charm to doing Wrigley during the day, you know, because up until 5 years ago, that was your only choice. No, I'm kidding.
not five, but not too much longer than that.
It's wild, you know, because it's like that happened in my lifetime. You know what I mean? Like sometimes it's almost hard to wrap my head around. But day games are a hell of a lot of fun. I've been to way more day games than I have night games. In fact, I think I've only been to one night game at Wrigley.
Oh, interesting.
Everything else has been a day game. Yeah. It's funny. I find myself watching night games on TV. On TV, on MLB Network with a VPN, but that's besides the point.
sure.
Because you can't watch them locally sometimes. But anyway, day games are always a lot of fun. And of course, the other thing is that, you know, Chicago is, of course, a huge wrestling town. So the odds are, nothing's been announced yet because it's so far in advance, of course, but the odds are that there will be at least one, if not multiple shows that weekend as well, whether it's, you know, AAW or freelance, you know, there's bound to be something going on. So probably be able to scope out a wrestling show as well.
Yeah. I know when we were planning to do this originally in 2020, we had lined up with freelance. They were running something at the Logan Square Auditorium. So hopefully that something like that will be able to work out again. I'd love to go to Logan Square for sure and see that venue. It definitely looks like a really cool venue.
It is
for sure.
It is not at all what you would like expect at first. Cause the first time I ever saw Logan Square was probably when I was living in Indianapolis, and I think it was on a Chikara DVD, oddly enough. And I was just sort of like, that place, you know, like you said, that place looks really cool. And then when I went there for the first time, it was not really what I expected, but it is a great venue. It's, the venue itself is really cool. And, you know, I've seen a couple of, really, really, really good shows there. But I'm looking forward to it. You know, it's an easy drive for me and like Michael Bratta, who both, you know, live here in the city. But
you get to see Kraken in person. That's what I want, man.
We should tell them to get that costume back on. It'll be a really great time. And of course there will also still be an online component, you know, like a virtual component for people that aren't able to attend in person. Keep your eyes peeled for all the details of that, but that's down the road.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit harder, you know, considering everybody that usually helps moderate the tournaments will be there in person. So, we might have to see who else might be able to help out with that, more remotely. But yeah, we'll see, at least try to get everybody that you can be able to see the Q&As and things like that. We will have some type of online tournament that will get you into the Galacticon Cup. But I think maybe I know this past year, half were online, half were in person. It's definitely going to be much more towards the in person because we do expect a bigger crowd this year. And again, that is the weekend before the Hall of Fame weekend in Waterloo, Iowa. So make it a double shot. You know, if you're coming in, come into Chicago, do a little sightseeing in the Midwest, and then go out to Iowa for the next week. I mean, I think there's a couple people I know that are planning to do just that, including myself. So,
yeah, I'm going to make it this year, come hell or high water. But
even if your car breaks down, it's still going to be easy to get there for you this year. So
right, yeah.
You have, at least have some people that can give you a ride out to water.
Obviously lots of cool stuff to look forward to on that end. You know, the upcoming sets, some really great stuff. And, you know, it's worth noting that the tape was rolling on the Q&A. So yeah. Austin Idol, the Legends team, the Indies team, Zeke and Ty, and then Rob, of course, we've got all of that. So there's a good chance that, you know, as I near my paternity leave from Roll Up, that we might be using some of that audio in upcoming shows. And of course, we've also talked about using some of the audio from the old King of Pro Wrestling podcast, which we initially started with the Phil Singer Games podcast before we kind of transitioned into Roll Up. It's available. I know the guy who created it. It was me. I did it. And so we'll be able to use some of that audio potentially as well for some of the upcoming episodes.
But I did have a number of people reach out to me asking if that couldn't make the virtual one just due to either family commitments or work or something like that, is asking, hey, I really would love to hear that Austin Idol interview. I'm sure you will definitely get a chance to hear that at one point soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And of course, with the holidays upcoming, you know, I know that kind of my tradition with my podcast, both the Quantum Leap podcast, Fate's Wide Wheel is the name of that podcast, by the way. We basically completed our journey on Quantum Leap about a year ago, but there's other stuff that we've done since then, although we've been on a bit of a hiatus. But traditionally, like with that and with King of Pro Wrestling, I would usually kind of take a little bit of a break around the holidays anyway, and maybe, you know, re-release some old episodes or whatnot. So, you know, if it's not coming sooner, you know, keep your eyes peeled around Christmas and New Year's, because we'll probably, you know, drop something around then.
I think we kind of plotted out the rest of the year. I think we're, you know, that weekend. Yeah, that week right before Christmas is probably gonna be our last one for the year, and probably that weekend, the weekend between Christmas and New Year's, we'll definitely be off that week there. I'm planning to do not a heck of a lot except for build some giant Lego sets. That's my only plan for that week.
Good for you, man. You know, we did quite on purpose, leave, or maybe not quite on purpose, leave one of the announcements out from our earlier discussion. And that's because for the main event of the evening tonight, we have a, what I think is a really cool discussion, something that we've not done before. And that is we're going to talk about all of the Ringside companions that have been released by Phil Singer Games, because the other big announcement, and it was previewed, even Chad Olson actually flashed his copy, which looks super cool, of a brand new Ringside Companion, which will be released in December. It will be available for pre-order on Black Friday with everything else. That's all basically been confirmed on the boards. I know there was some question about it at first, but you know, we can kind of reconfirm right here that that will actually be happening. So be excited, promoters, because it's going to be really cool. I'm really looking forward to it myself personally. And I know I've gotten a lot of mileage out of the four that I do have. But, Mr. Tournament Master, yes. I was informed not long ago, because I thought I had all of the Ringside Companions that have been released. It turns out that there was a fifth that was released for 2096.
Yes, there was. And you did not know about that until I informed you of that.
I did not. I was for sure that 2101 was the first one. But it turns out that there was a 2096 Ringside Companion. Todd, of course, has a copy. I do not. Todd, why don't we... I don't know what's necessarily in it. I mean, I kind of do because I have 2101. But we were talking about it before we started recording. And I was like, hey, let's just do this live since I don't know anything about it. Sure. So... This is not us being lazy. This is just us being wanting to have a little fun. So tell me about the 2096 Ringside Companion.
Sure. So I have both the 2196 and the 2101. Now the 2101, I have two versions of it. One with a more hardcover, which is the one that we still do have available in the shop right now. And then there's like the soft, just paper cover, not the cardstock on it. I think the two 2101s are luckily the same. But just that cover difference. But the 2096, pretty much everything in that is in the 2101 book. I think if I remember that at that point, it was like, oh, but they just added some more things to it. But kind of looking at it, at the two things, there is a couple things, different things listed on the cover. Flipping to the inside of the 2096 book, there is a view of a wrestling match going on the ring in the first page. Nice. And then we get to the rule clarifications and updates. And that's the same exact thing that is printed on the inside cover of the 2101 book.
Okay.
So that's the first one. And then we get into the match listings. And, you know, we have a total of 14 matches listed in the 2096 book compared to, what do we have, 18 in the 2101 book.
Yeah.
So... let's see. It looks like both have the Aetherin Ultimate Escape match. Both have the Barbed Wire Cosmic Cage match. Both have the Battle Zone match. However, the next match listed in 2101 that's not in 2096 is the Caster Chain match.
Yeah.
That's one I used to like to use a lot, actually.
Yes.
Then the next one after that for both is the Cosmic Cage, which again was one that was in the original instructions as well.
Right.
The Cygnus Brass Knuckles match. Hopefully I pronounced that right. Then we have the...
Cygnus. You say Cygnus, whatever.
Cygnus. Okay. I think I've said Cygnus in the past before too. They both have the Federation Exile match. They both have the Pitman match. They both have the Hydra Lumberjack match. And then we deviate again. The 2101 book has the Lepus Stunrod match and the Milky Way Falls Count Anywhere match. Neither one of those appear in the 2096. The Falls Count Anywhere match in particular was very, very popular in my Fed. That was one I was very glad to see pop up in 2101. They both do have the Regal Royal Rumble, which I'm not sure if Tom should have been allowed to use, but you know, that's all right. let's see. Then we both have, both of them have a Survivor match. Both have the three-man or four-man tag matches rules. Both have a Titan Death. Both have Torture Chamber. And then the 2101 has a Turnbuckle Shock match, which I believe, was that a chart beforehand? There's a couple of one-off charts. I can't remember if that was one of them or not. It might have been. But it says introduced in 3000. So yeah, that was part of the Classics 3000 book, the Turnbuckle Shock match. So that one was not in the 2096 book. But then after that, the last one is the Universal Battle Royal, which was very nebulous. I still don't think we have a really, you know, ever had a really great Battle Royal rules in a Ringside Companion. So hopefully that's going to change.
I mean, I've used the Red Carpet Rumble, which was in the Championship from Hollywood.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Set. Yeah. And the one thing that I will say, as you know, obviously, is they're long, man. You've got to be ready. You know, it's like, that's just like the Cybernetico and the Chikara booklet, you know, those matches can be super long as well. So, you know, you got to be ready for that. But, I've not run a lot of like Battle Royal, Royal Rumble type matches. I've run a few here and there, but you know, I tended to stay away from them just in general, cause I never felt like they were.
I have a good system for them. So I will run them occasionally. I'll run one Royal Rumble a year, which is at my Rags to Riches pay-per-view. That was actually one I started in my CPC fed. And eventually brought it into the GWF. So that's a big one there. And I do have a couple battle royals throughout the years, but I have a good system of how I do it. And it's usually pretty fair. And for the first time when I first started, it was, you know, pretty loosey goosey and it was almost kind of like, almost like a, big gauntlet match, I think the way I have it now, I really like how it works. But I know I've seen some other rules. I know Wiener Meek came up with a cool like battle royal save chart and stuff like that. So I don't know. I haven't looked at how the battle royal rules are set up in this booklet, and we might tweak that a little bit if need be. But because I think it's an important part of any wrestling promotion, you know, the battle royal. Yeah, it's classic.
Oh yeah, no, there is no doubt. It is. I have instituted them mostly in my Legends Fed. I rarely use them in my GWF, but my Legends Fed, I've had a few of them, and I set it up for my newest Legends Fed, which I, kind of did a bit of a reboot this past Thanksgiving. So I set up last year that I would do a Battle Royal every Thanksgiving. So there'll be another one coming up soon.
That's good. So the other thing I'll say, the 2101 book did have a GWF injury table and a hurt referee chart. Neither one of those appeared in the 2096 book, but the feud table and the feud table rules and stuff like that are here. Those are in both books as well, both on the back cover for both of them. So yeah, about four new matches added in, a couple extra charts to that 2101 book. But yeah, pretty much everything else from the 2096 is in there. 2096, just more of a collector's item than anything else, I think, at this point.
Yeah, because, you know, it's worth noting, we'll talk about this as we go on, but like the 2101 booklet, in a lot of ways, it's the compilation. You know, like, you know, it includes everything up until that point, basically.
Yes. Yeah.
The interesting thing is when we get to 2107, it's just new stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't rehash everything. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, it's one of those situations where you really need 2101 to have kind of the foundation. And then 2107 is you know, the enhancement, if you will. And 2107 is a great booklet because it includes some really cool stuff that's not just matches, which, I mean, 2101 and 2096, well, not 2096 so much, but 2091 is the same way because it had the hurt referee chart, the injury table, the updated feud chart, which the feud table was also in the 2096 booklet, correct?
Yes, it is the same feud table.
Now, here's a question for you before we move on to 2107. The 2101 booklet, of course, has the rule clarifications and updates. Are they the same in 2096 as they are in 2101?
They're the same exact ones, yeah. Those pages are exactly the same.
So one of the other things that I wanted to note about 2101 before we move on, and I assume 2096 is kind of similar to this, is I love the fact that the booklet starts off almost like in-universe. It says, special match rules, a summary from the office of Commissioner Grogan. And yes. I just think that's so cool. Like, you know, it's just that little piece of flair that makes it feel, you know, very official. I will say the rule.
Here's a change. The 2096 book says, a summary from the office of Commissioner Carter.
Nice.
So that was updated for 2101. Yes, that's a good call. I didn't even pick up at that at first.
The rule clarifications and updates that are included, I love, and I felt like they were essential for me because there were a couple of things that I did have some questions about when I was playing the game, and there were a couple of like house rules that I'd brewed up that I was using before I got the booklet, and one of the ones I remember that I used too. Use for tag matches. And I don't know where I got this from because I honestly don't know if it's different from what was in the original rule booklet that I received. But tagging out on defense, the wrestler would come in on level 2 offense, not level 1 offense. So yeah. I did that when I started, and now of course, you know, I do the level 1, but I loved having the clarifications and updates of the rules. I loved having the new feud table. I thought it was great. The injury table was very cool because it was one of those things where, you know, sometimes you'd be planning something and a wrestler would get injured as a result of the feud table and you'd really want that wrestler to, you know, to carry on. And this gave you an opportunity to have them wrestle hurt and maybe, yeah, you know, affect the outcome of the match. And then of course, further a storyline and whatnot. So it was nice to have, you know, the rules for that and the hurt referee chart, I love. So, I've gotten so much mileage out of my 2101 ringside companion. The 2107 companion, however, moving on, like I said, it's not really the compilation. It adds new material. And we get the Cygnus Adamantium fist match. Well,
even before that, there is a note from Tom, and he says, yeah, there's no overlap between this. So you'll need the other, you'll need both in order to play, it does say.
Right.
The first one match is that Cygnus Adamantium fist match.
Which is meant to be a bit of an update for the brass knuckles match. Then we get a match that I know I've used a lot, and that is the four weapons of destruction match.
Yep. Again, I think another one that was a separate chart before coming into this book.
Yes, I think you are absolutely right. The one thing that this booklet, however, does not do in every instance that the 2101 booklet did is it does not necessarily give the years that all of the matches were introduced.
You're right. Now it does say, like, I can see the next match afterwards, it does say when it was brought in, but yeah, a couple of them do say it actually, because it doesn't say like in the, like a subtext, it does say like the background. So like the Adamantium fist was introduced. Oh, he's originally introduced as the Cygnus Brass Knuckles match, but got fiercer. And then,
you know what? Here's what we get for not preparing. On the very back of the booklet, the 2107 booklet,
there you go.
It does list everything. So yeah. the Adamantium Fist match is new for 2107. The Four Weapons of Destruction match was 2104.
Yeah.
Then next up, we had the Total Anarchy match, which was an interesting match, a lot of fun.
I used it a few times. Yeah.
Yeah, especially with Anarchy, I would have him challenge people, sure, you know, in that match a lot. The Scorpy King of the Ring match, which again, I thought was fun. Mandrill would have that one a lot.
Yep.
Which is a 2107 match. Now here's where things get kind of interesting because we get a chart here that is not a match, but instead it's Splatter and Viper's CPC lottery chart. Again, introduced in 2107, and this was, you know, a chart that was used after a match was over.
Right.
To have, you know, Viper and or Splatter, you know, carry out attacks on GWF wrestlers. Then, of course, there's the original Splatters lottery chart from 2096, which it's interesting that that did not get featured in the 2096 booklet or the 2101 booklet.
True. Yeah, I think the focus is more on the match and the non character specific charts. This one definitely had a lot more character specific matches and charts. This is definitely very in that moment of the CPC timeframe.
Yes, totally. And then of course we've got the three-way battle zone from 2102, which is just it's a paragraph basically. It's not a match per se. Then we get the Wolf Wildman chart from 2106, which again kind of carries on that, like you're saying, of the character specific charts. And then we get the Zero Gravity Platform match from 2105, which I know has gotten a lot of airtime over on Uncharted Territory.
That one was again another separate chart. There was a two-sided chart. I think one had there's like the out of the ring chart and the five count chart. So I think you could like be thrown out of the ring but you could somehow get back into there, if you were right. Able to, beat gravity or anti-gravity. I don't know, whatever that is.
Yeah. And I can say, I think I only ran that match once. Maybe. I don't know that I ever ran it more than once.
No zero gravity platform battle royals.
No.
I'm sure that was a Chad Olsen specialty, if I'm not mistaken.
I didn't have a zero G champion.
No, nothing like that. I ran a couple of them here and there, but yeah, probably not as much as, definitely not as much as like a false cut anywhere or anything like that.
Yeah. So. And I didn't, honestly, I didn't use the Wolf Wildman chart that much, believe it or not. I used Splatter's original lottery chart from 2096 quite a bit. I remember that. And I ended up using the Splatter and Viper CPC lottery chart as well. But the other matches, I did run a few, with the Cygnus Adamantium fist match probably being the one I ran the least. Although I will say that the 2112 Ringside Companion, which...
But before we move on to that, I do want to talk about the cover of the 2107 booklet.
Yes.
Very unique. I don't know what went into this one here. So there's some guy with a goatee. I'm not sure who this is supposed to be. And he's kind of playing the game. And it's an interesting selection of cards he has there at that point.
Yeah. Thantos and Malice.
Yeah, Thantos and Malice. Maybe it's Barry. Was this Barry? Was this you? Were you modeling for this back in the day?
It's worth noting that the dice roll is a 4, a 1 and a 3.
And the 3 is not the direction that the 3... the thing is, the die next to it, the 3 is in the right direction, but the 3 and the 1 facing up is going... like vertically and not diagonally.
As opposed to diagonal, yeah. The gentleman is wearing a Champions of the Galaxy t-shirt. He has his charts there in front of him. And he also, oddly enough, does not have a rule book, but has the Champions of the Galaxy introductory game edition booklet.
Handbook.
Yeah, handbook.
Yeah.
So very odd, rock on though. It's interesting because I feel like the 2107 booklet is important. And I I'm glad that I have it, but it does not necessarily feel quite as essential as the 2101.
Or the 2112 is what we're about to get into. I think that one, I definitely use a lot more. I probably didn't pull the 2107 out very often, except for the 4 weapons of destruction match, which I honestly might've just used the chart instead of using the booklet there too.
Yeah. Yeah. Now the 2112 booklet though, we get some nice artwork on the cover. Somebody's about to be powerbombed through a table by a gladiator. And outside the ring, too. Yeah. this is going to be painful. This booklet for me, like, I feel like, again, the 2101 is kind of essential, but 2112 might be my favorite of the COTG themed Ringside Companions.
Yeah.
This is the booklet that if you grew up on a steady diet of late 90s, early 2000s professional wrestling, attitude era wrestling, basically, this booklet's your bread and butter. It's got your triple threat match. It's got your Cirque du Soleil match. It's got your hardcore Titan death match, coffin match. And of course, the big one for me, the ladder match. So it's got some awesome stuff in here. Now, it's also worth noting that all of the matches that are on here had their own charts. So you could purchase the triple threat match individually on its own. You could purchase a chart that had the Cirque du Soleil match and the Hardcore Titan death match on the flip side. You could purchase a chart that had the Centric Coffin match and the Nightmare Matrix match, you know, on the flip side. The Ruins of Antillia match and the Lava Pit match on the flip side. Like those were individual charts that you could buy, right? I'm not wrong. Yeah.
No, you're not wrong. Those are all double sided charts. And actually, even the other thing here, the female conversion chart, that was a single, you know, piece of paper as well. It wasn't as much on the cardstock, but that was available as a one sided thing as well.
And I think I had all of those except for the female conversion chart and the triple threat match. I don't think I ever had the triple threat match on its own, and I don't think I ever had
the triple threat one. I of any of the ones in this book, I probably use the triple threat the most.
Same here. Yeah, I use the triple threat match a lot. I use it for my indies feds, my legends feds. I mean, that is definitely one of the ones I've used the most.
And I had adapted that for the shimmer set to get the 4, 5, and 6 person version.
Right.
Same mechanics there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course the cell match, man, the cell match is so much fun. I use that a ton. I've told the story before, but I think one of the more famous ones that I ran, not the best one, one of the more famous ones is the ones where Trix beat Monolith in the cell.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, and I ran an angle afterwards. It's on the boards, actually, where I wrote it. I did a pretty in-depth write-up, and I had Trix basically blow the cell up after he left the ring. Like, he pressed a button, the cell collapsed down on Monolith, because Monolith needed to be injured, and I just thought, I didn't know if Monolith, you know, falling through the top of the cell was enough to like take Monolith out for like 12 cards, because I rolled double sixes or whatever. So yeah. I was like, you know what? I'm just going all out. And I had Trix like, you know, grab the you know, the button that drops the cell and like press it, and it just caused the cell to like collapse in on itself or whatever.
Nice.
Wild youth. The Hardcore Titan death match, super cool. Like, I loved the opportunity to have something like this, because you could really spice up any of your regular sort of hardcore matches or no rules matches with this. You know, you grab a floating vid monitor near the ring and smash it on the opponent's head. You know, stuff like that. I just thought was so cool. And of course, because there are a lot of add ones here, gave you the opportunity, depending on what you did, you know, how you did blood in your fed, to, you know, make things, you know, pretty bloody compared to maybe your normal Titan death match. The coffin match, one of the greatest matches of all time in my GWF, was a coffin match between Incubus and Prodigy. That match was one of the best matches I have ever run.
Nice. I think if I remember right, I think we had a really, I mean, that's the longest match ever at Galacticon, if I remember right. You know, we did run of those in one of the tournaments at one point. Might have even been Incubus in it too, now that I remember it. But yeah, just went on forever, because like with that one there, it's like you couldn't just get a pin and win. You had to have like the certain role on the chart, you know, I think a 9 or higher in order to even have a chance of winning the match. And it was just, if you just never rolled it, it would just go on for a while.
Yeah, it was one of the
longest. Each guy maybe had like 10 tokens on him or something like that. You know, it's wild what you could have there.
That sounds about right. The Nightmare Matrix match, I always thought was an interesting match, because this was definitely something that leaned into, you know, some of the sci-fi aspects of the game. Was not the type of match that certainly at the time you could imagine as actually taking place. Nowadays, I feel like, you know,
maybe now you could,
right? With certain like cinematic matches and stuff like that. And yeah, just an interesting match.
I know this is a big staple in Tom's Fed at the time, and even more recently. I mean, he used that for a while. This was a big one that he liked to use in his own Fed.
Yeah, I did. Honestly, I'll be completely honest. I did not use it that much. I used it a bit, but I didn't use it that much. And I think part of it was because you know, I always ran kind of my Fed as a bit more grounded and kind of blood and guts. Like I had, you know, like there were times when, you know, certain things, I would kind of be like, I don't know if you know, that's for me, or, you know what I mean? Like I just at the time, certainly, nowadays, you know, I've kind of run with it, especially because it's gotten so expansive and Tom has leaned, you know, I think more heavily into some of the sci-fi aspects of the game. Sure. You know, it's fine. But at the time, yeah, there was definitely elements where I was sort of like, you know, I don't know if I'm going to use that or run with that quite as much. That said, you know, we go from that to basically, you know, zombie warfare in a way. But with Ace, I used the Ruins of Antillia match a lot. And I remember having a match between Aegis and Murdoch in a Ruins of Antillia match that was pretty brutal and just a great match. I had a couple matches with Godsend in there as well. I can't remember who's facing, but there was one, it might've been Lance Atlas actually, where they had a, you know, a barn burner. So I used that quite a bit in my Ace spud. The Lava Pit match was another one I didn't use a ton, but I did use it sometimes. It was, I think I wanted to use it sparingly because it felt to me like the Lava Pit match was, you know, one of us walks in, or two of us walk in, but only one of us walks out sort of thing. I wanted to really kind of reserve almost like a torture chamber. You know, I didn't use the torture chamber a ton either, honestly. Although oddly enough, I used it in my CWF early on to kind of hotshot the Vengeance and Evolution feud.
Oh, interesting. I just broke out both the Ruins of Antilla and the Lava Pit match in 2117. I wanted something kind of interesting on the Central Supercard, and we had like the that cinematic match of the on Antilla that was in there between Zelos and Oppressor. Yeah, I just needed something else. And I'm like, oh, let me spice it up. Let's throw it on Antilla and see what happens there. Yeah. And then for the Paganex Ventross feud, they already had one on a Lava Pit match there.
Wow, nice.
As well. Paganex had lost the first match to Ventross, but he got a big convincing victory the second time in the Lava Pit. So nice. It's kind of cool to see that, you know, Mike bringing those two back.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I'm a fan of using those, and I'll certainly be using them in my CWF as well.
Yeah.
Now here is a chart that I'm going to be completely honest with you. I have very mixed feelings on.
Oh, I'm sure many people do. Yeah.
I'm probably, and I could be wrong about this, and if I am, then please, you know, tell me. I'm probably in the minority on the reason why I have a problem with this chart.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's a mixed feeling. It's not I don't like it because of this sort of thing, but let's break it down for a second. The conversion rules chart when females wrestle against males. You know, this is a chart that when a female fights a male, make the following adjustments to her wrestling card. You got a really cool picture. It looks like of Supernova, Amazonia, and Thrash. Interesting artwork, very, you know, alternate artwork, not artwork that was ever, you know, anywhere else.
I'm wondering if it might have been on an issue of the promoter, perhaps. But I say no, it looks like it is a wait, who did the art there? Is that the guy who did Hunger and Serpentine? Is that him?
Randy Bugsdale.
Randy Bugsdale, yeah, it's a Randy Bugsdale piece.
That makes it. Yeah, you can see the RB.
Yeah, see the RB. Yeah. He did that piece. I think it's possible it might have been an issue of the promoter as well. I could be wrong.
Promoters, feel free to correct us and point us in the right direction on the message boards. Mm-hmm. So here's I want to break it down and just for my feelings on it. It has always been said, kind of, you know, by Tom and by a lot of promoters out there, that the GWF is real. That these guys are actually fighting. This is not a work, it's a shoot.
Right.
That, you know, you have, if you've got a guy in there who's, you know, 7'4", 350 pounds, and, you know, somebody like Supernova steps in the ring with them, she's probably going to be at a disadvantage, right? You know, right. Okay, fine. I have never, ever prescribed to that. It's wrestling. You look at the moves that are on some of these cards, you know, you look at some of these storylines, et cetera, all this sort of stuff. To me, it's a work. It should be a work. It's fun, it's entertainment, it's enjoyment. If it were a real fight, if it were a shoot in all of these instances, you know, even with my suspension of disbelief because I'm getting told the story, I might not enjoy it as much, quite frankly. So for me, and this is the way I feel about real professional wrestling as well, if you're in there just telling a story, it doesn't matter. Do you know what I mean? Like it doesn't matter. I shouldn't have to downgrade a wrestler's like power or pin rating or whatever because they're a different gender. Like, what's that? Come on, you know?
I mean, there's other games where, you know, women and men, I guess, are on the same level. You know, Street Fighter, you know, Chun-Li was, you right? know, kick butt, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You do. That's a great parallel. You look at Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat, or whatever. Yeah. I think that one of the things too is that, and I can understand from a perspective of when these cards are created, the idea is that, you know, the women only wrestle women and they don't wrestle men. And certainly at the time that this chart was created, I think that the notion was easily, you know, one of, especially when you're coming out of a phase where women had no place in the ring pretty much at all. You know, like women's wrestling had been, you know, practically eradicated at times from certain promotions. To having a chart like this, I mean, sure, you're looking at this and saying they're not on the same level. Okay, fine, whatever. But the thing is, and I know that there's a lot of people out there, and I've seen the conversations on the board, so I'm sure there are people listening to this right now that completely disagree, that they don't think that this is the way it should be, you know, get off my lawn sort of stuff, whatever. And that's fine. I certainly respect people's opinions on what they want to watch and what they want to enjoy. But in some ways, it goes back to, you know, some of the stuff that I've seen and being like at some of the Shimmer shows. And one of the most entertaining matches that I've seen at Shimmer was a match between Saraya Knight and someone whose name I'm just not going to mention because I don't want to give him any publicity, but, you know, he's a guy that used to stick a lollipop down his pants. And I'll tell you what, there was no doubt in my mind that Saraya Knight was going to beat the shit out of him. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. There was never a moment where I sat there and I thought to myself, well, he's a dude, she's a girl, like, he's going to walk all over her. It was like, no, Saraya Knight's going to, like, destroy him, you know? and I've seen matches. I saw a match between Eddie Kingston and Mercedes Martinez that was probably one of the best matches that I've had the pleasure of seeing live. And you know who won? Mercedes Martinez. Like, so to me, I'm not even talking about some of the bigger, like more publicized matches like Tessa Blanchard and Sami Callihan or whatever. Like, you know, some of these smaller matches that I've had the pleasure of seeing, it just reinforces the idea that, like, I want to see them tell me a good story. And if they're doing it right, I'm going to believe that Mercedes Martinez can beat Eddie Kingston. You know, I'm not going to question that. So anyway, that's a long-winded way of saying that for me personally, I do not use this chart anymore. I don't know if I ever used it, to be completely honest with you, but I don't use it anymore. In my indies fed, I've had women, you know, wrestle men and, you know, just be on an even keel. And it works. It works for me. That's the way the indies are. Right. 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 But that's also the way that the indies are these days.
Sure.
You know,
sure. Yeah, like for the indies, for sure.
When we talk about Masha Slamovich taking on Daniel Garcia, there's never a question of just sort of like, well, clearly Daniel Garcia is going to win. You know, it's like, no, they're going to get in there and they're going to wrestle and they're going to have a great match. You know, Shotzi Blackheart, I had the chance to interview her after a Shimmer show. And one of my favorite interviews ever, this is back when I drank, we're sitting at a bar and we're sipping whiskey and we're talking. And we actually talked a little bit about the game because her card had just been released. And as we were talking about the game, actually before we kind of had talked about the game a little bit, and then we were talking about wrestling in general, and she was talking about intergender wrestling a little bit. And I mentioned the fact that this chart existed, and her response was just like, that's bullshit. And I was like, no, I agree. But that said, you know, it is up to you, promoter. And there are some promoters that would never in a million years ever book a match between a man.
Right.
And
so yeah, there's that school of thought too. Sure.
Yeah. But, hey, you know, what's a podcast but, you know, a little bit of controversy. So
there you go. Well, at the time there, I think intergender wrestling was just starting to be a thing on, like, you know, mainstream WW, I guess F at the time. I think it was still F at that time. It was just starting to become a thing. So it's like, well, you know, it's time to incorporate it there. And you know, I think it started happening on Centra. I think it's kind of interesting, you know, bring it to, you know, another dimension. And that's, you know, where it was, I guess, acceptable there at that point. So it continued, you know, it continued for a little bit. But I guess now, the big thing is mixed tag matches, I guess, is the current GWF thing.
Yeah. And it's interesting to think, too, that at the time, you know, that this chart was probably created. Yeah. We're thinking China. You know, was wrestling guys, you know, and held the Intercontinental Championship.
But I mean, there's other ones too.
Yeah.
There's other ones too, but obviously China was like the big name. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on. So next up, here's a chart that I actually used quite a bit. I really liked this chart. This was a new chart for 2112. Cordanis was kind of involved with this, and this was the Hitman Hired Gun chart. And I just thought that this was a really cool idea. I thought it kind of could potentially enhance, you know, some of the matches, some of the feuds, and it did. It worked really well. You know, the gist of it being that, you know, Mike Fortune or Kraken would basically, you know, be up in the balcony, shoot somebody with a dart, and it would affect, you know, their performance in the match. Then there was a separate shooting injury chart. I dug that chart, and like I said, I ended up using it quite a bit. Now here's a chart that I loved and I still love.
This is a good one. This is a good one.
I think this is really cool. It's the coming out of retirement chart. And the neat thing is it breaks it down between somebody who's been retired for, you know, they just retired this year. They've been, you know, gone for 0 to 4 years, 5 to 9 years or 10 or more years. And it gives you the, you know, what to change about their card in order to, you know, that they're coming back into the ring. And I just thought it was really, you know, it was really cool. And you know, you could promote a match between Kraken and Lord Nexus in 2112 if you want to, or do Star Warrior versus Bloodline. It was a neat chart.
Yeah, I think I did it. I've used it a handful of times. I think I did some like tag matches, you know, with like a retired person and a current one. Nice. And then together. Yeah. So that was fun. But yeah, it's kind of cool kind of seeing, and pretty much it just kind of adjusts the chart ratings, the pin rating, and the finisher ratings. Right. Yeah, you know, pretty nice. I mean, it's kind of tough for really to do beyond that, because everyone, that kind of applies to everybody. You know, it'd be nice to kind of maybe adjust some of the other like moves here or there or something like that, but it's kind of tough to incorporate that on a chart like this.
Well, you know, and I even think of like when Steamboat, you know, wrestled Jericho, for instance. And I think that the neat thing about that match is that, you know, there were certainly elements of Steamboat's repertoire, maybe where, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, maybe he's taking a little bit of a slide. But the beautiful thing about, and this is also the beautiful thing about Chris Jericho, the beautiful thing about it is like his moves still had impact. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when he hit those chops, when he hit that cross body, like it felt like, you know, those were still big moves. And I think that in a way it's kind of nice to have that reflected almost in the game as well. And that's the other thing that I loved about this chart, and that I love about some of the other matches that we've already mentioned, like the triple threat and the cell match, is that it felt like 2112's booklet got us closer and closer to the game feeling like, you know, real professional wrestling.
Right.
Not that it didn't from the get-go. I mean, out of the box, the first set, you know, it had that flow. But to have these little embellishments, it gave you the opportunity to do things. And let's be honest, people had plenty of homegrown rules, you know, for a lot of this stuff before, you know, there became official rules and whatnot. But I just thought that was really cool. We get another character-specific chart after that, which is Bloodline's Master Lock Injury Chart. I use this chart quite a bit. It put Scion Nexus on the shelf for quite a while because Cordanis basically ordered Bloodline to injure people with the Master Lock, and this chart, you know, gave you the opportunity to see what would happen, you know, if Bloodline was going to try to injure somebody with the Master Lock.
Honestly, I would always forget to use this chart.
Oh, really?
I always forgot it existed until like, well, after, you know, but.
Oh. I used it. I ended up using it quite a bit, mainly because Bloodline was, you know, in 2112 in particular, he was my, he was kind of the face of the Fed in a lot of ways. He was my champ for a long time. I just wanted to do anything I could to, you know, make him be a bastard and this was a perfect way to do that. Then of course we get the Earth ladder match, brought by, American guy. I love the ladder match. Love the rules. I think it works so well. I've used it a lot. We get the Mensa table match, which is a Mensar specialty. Another match I used a lot, especially in like the Mensar and Wolf stuff that I did. Like I used that match between the two of them. I've used it. I used it with Monolith and Wolf. It's just a fun match. Then we get probably my favorite section of the booklet, the one that I used the most out of everything in here.
You did use it. Okay.
Used it a ton. The rulings by Commissioner Cardenas. It gives you rules for title shots, suspensions, and special match rulings. The special match rulings chart I would use sometimes just because I couldn't decide on what I wanted to do. Even after Cardenas wasn't a thing anymore, sometimes when I would be, you know, using other things, whatever, I would use that chart so much. I used all of it. I loved this part. I really did. I thought it just added more flavor. Yeah. And of course, you know, not only do you have the title shots and suspensions, but there's a bias aspect of it. So, you know, is he biased for them? Is he biased against them? It changes the roles, the results. And just some cool stuff. I loved the 2112 book a ton.
Yeah. No, that's a great book. I mean, comparing 2107 to the 2112 is... there's no comparison. It's definitely much more useful book in my mind.
I'm glad I have the 2107. I'm sure. I'm so glad I have it, but I feel like the 2112 feels a lot more essential than 2107. And then of course we have which I think in some ways is might be my favorite of them all, is the Legends of Wrestling Ringside Companion. Mm-hmm. I love the photo on the cover. You know, you got your old school like cage match from the Olympic Auditorium in there. I cannot for the life of me identify who's on the cover. I'm sure somebody out there knows. But it pretty much, one of the things that's lovely about this is it takes a lot of the matches that we've had in COTG and modifies them for Legends, but it also includes some stuff that we've never had for Legends. So we get the barbed wire cage, we get the battle royal, brass knuckles match, cage match, the chain match, the coffin match, the dog collar match, which is new, falls count anywhere, finisher match, first blood match, the ladder match, of course, last man standing match, which, this is different. It's worth noting from the rules that we get in the Legends of Wrestling Color Edition for the Last Man Standing match, I believe.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Loser Leaves Town, Lumberjack match, the Singapore Cane match, 6 or 8 man tag matches, the table match, tag team elimination match, the Titan Death match, both standard and hardcore versions. And then we
get Titan or Texas?
Texas, excuse me.
I default to Titan too, you know.
Right?
It's ingrained in our brains, yes.
It really is. It really is. And also something I loved about what Mike kind of expanded on a little bit with the early classics, because there was always this question of like, you know, if the Titans are such good guys, why were they the ones that got the death match going? But then you learn a little bit more about guys like Solar Flare and Moonstrike and, you know, wrestling in POW and et cetera. And anyway.
Yeah, nice retcon by Mike there.
Absolutely. Right. Then we get the game charts, which include a conversion chart when male wrestle against females. And then we get a guest referee chart, which is something new.
Yeah.
We get the hurt referee chart and the injury chart as well.
Yeah. All in all, just a great, great compilation of different things. Everything you'd really, really, really need. And, you know, I know he's uncredited there, but, you know, Mike Maleska did a great job kind of pulling all that together and making it very cohesive and, you know, picking the great selection of stuff, adding in some nice things. And yeah, overall, great book. And I know it's one that people have been dying to get their hands on. You know, that's been sold out for a while.
And it feels to me too like this Ringside Companion, if you didn't have any of the other three and you had, or four rather, and you had this one, you'd be okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So. Yep. You'd be missing a couple of the big ones like the Triple Threat and the Cell Match. But other than that, like you'd have everything else. And I use it a lot. It's probably the one that gets the most use for me.
And to be quite honest, you know, when you're coming to Legends, you're kind of talking up through the 80s and Triple Threats and Cell Matches didn't exist then. Right?
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. I'm definitely not running a Cell Match between Lou Thesz and Buddy Rogers, you know. So that brings us to the end of the road until December when we get our new spiral bound.
Yes.
Expansive, beautiful looking Ringside Companion. Here's a question. Do we have a price tag on that yet?
No, we do not yet. I think there's still a couple of decisions on every, you know, the prototype. We still might add a couple of things to that. You know, I think a couple of the things that, you know, I was saying, you know, if we were going to do this, you know, and doing it right, everything you'd want in there. I think it's going to be mostly just kind of, it'll be more generic type. So, you know, there might be a chart in the back saying, yeah, for, you know, GWF, the Texas Death Match is the Titan Death Match. Yeah, just kind of like renaming a couple of things. I think that'll be referenced there. But yeah, I think most things will kind of be more geared towards the Legends and Indies naming conventions and things like that. And maybe less on all the GWF matches. We might be adding some of those in there. I'm not 100% sure. I'm kind of leaving that to Chad, Corey, and Mike to do that part. But the one thing I mentioned is like, you know, we're going to do, I think the spiral round is a great idea because, you know, just being able to flip and have it open to just that one page is great. Or if there is like, you know, two pages that are needed for a match, that the book should open up and you have both those pages next to each other. And they're definitely taking that into account as well and how they're designing the book.
Yeah, that's a great point because I know that there are a couple of matches in some of the other books that don't do that. Like it's basically,
yeah, like you have to flip the page to get, you know, like two to six is on one page and seven to 12 is that shouldn't happen. So yeah. I think that's definitely being taken into account when looking at this.
Yeah. And it's, you know, the ladder match is a perfect example of that, where you have to kind of flip back and forth. But I'm so excited about it. You know, again, I mean, I'm fortunate enough. I know that there are some newer game fans out there and maybe even some older game fans who just didn't pick them up, that, you know, missed out on some of them. So I'm very fortunate to have the ones that I do, although I don't have the 2096 one or the soft cover edition of 2101. So the collector in me is aching, but that's okay. And I think that, yeah, having the new Ringside Companion will be, I mean, this is going to be probably one of the most essential items of, you know, Phil Singer Games ephemera that people can add to their collection. You know, we've been very fortunate that in a lot of the Legends and Indies booklets, over, you know, the past, you know, decade in particular, that we've gotten a lot of special matches in those handbooks. Yep. To have everything kind of collected in one place is always really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. No, definitely looking forward. This is a long time coming. This is one thing we've been talking about for a while. And, you know, I would love to have focused it on a lot myself, but there's been so many other things. I'm really thankful for Chad and Corey for kind of stepping up and, you know, helping, you know, coordinate this. And I know we've had help from other people. I know Pete Fusco was actually a big help as well. He had done some organization of some matches there that I know some of that work that he did was utilized for this to kind of help save a little bit of time and effort. Obviously Mike's done a lot of stuff, you know, with the stuff with the Legends book. Rob had done like a prototype a number of years ago. I think some of that work was also incorporated. So there's a lot of people who've kind of helped contribute to this to finally coming to fruition. And I think people will be really thrilled with it. You know, this is really the ultimate version of the Ringside Companion. I just got to figure out how I'm going to ship this thing, because I don't know if it's going to fit the regular game envelope there. I might have to come up with something. I want to make sure it's nice and protected too. So I have to figure that part out next.
Padded envelopes, man.
I'm thinking.
Have to go with some bubble mailers.
They got some bubble mailers coming up soon for sure.
That pretty much brings us to the end of the main event. It's about time to go home. Before we do, however, Todd, any other news and notes from FedHQ?
Let me think. So we're kind of kicking off the teaser. So obviously, you know, this first week here that we're kind of going through and announcing everybody that we announced the con, but new teasers will start next week. So Mondays will be FTR names. Wednesdays will be names for Indy, and then Legends will be on Fridays. So Warner's getting, you know, it's been working, I think, a little bit more on the FTR stuff to start, but we're getting more of the Legends and Indy stuff over to him now. We'll start releasing those little by little. And then the big day, Black Friday, is the 26th of November, day after American Thanksgiving. And so we'll have everything for sale then. We'll have the FTR, we'll have the Women of the Indies 2021, and of course Legends Expansion 8 and this Ringside Companion. And who knows, maybe something else. I know that I floated that out there before, and I know people were, you know, hypothesizing. I don't even know what it is yet, but although I have some ideas. I have some ideas of what it could be, you know, if there is something else. There might not be anything else, but I think there probably will be, just kind of knowing how things go around here. So, nice.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I've been working on teasers, trying to get things, you know, basically preloaded and ready to go in case I don't have time to work on them here in the future. So, you know, it's been fun kind of doing some research on some of those names, which brings me to my first shout out. I want to give a big shout out to Stu Lowry, because Stu has been so gracious in sharing with me his notes for the Legends Expansion handbook, which has allowed me to kind of, you know, basically copy his homework in order to help with these Legends teasers, so that I can have all that stuff done ahead of time, so that when the baby arrives, I'm not sitting here, you know, trying to write teasers and hold an infant, or calling Todd and saying, Todd, can you do the teaser tonight? and as far as the, you know, the women's set goes, luckily I'm fairly familiar with most of those names, so I'm able to get those done as well. But, that's your little behind the scenes look, folks. Of course, you know, really big shout out to our friends at Uncharted Territory, Chad, Corey, Stu, and Tim. They have, shortly after we drop this episode, they will have reached their 1 year anniversary with 52 episodes in the can for your ears. And, you know, Uncharted Territory has really just been probably one of the most exciting and engaging pieces that has come out over the past year when it comes to Phil Singer Games content. And, you know, I've just enjoyed listening to all the stuff that they've had to say about Legends of Wrestling, of course, you know, the early days of Champions of the Galaxy, and even their, you know, their non-game related episodes. I loved their baseball, you know, season preview episode. I am not a basketball guy at all, but I really enjoyed listening to their latest episode about basketball, just because I enjoy what they have to say, and you know, they're good guys. So congratulations on 1 year of excellence. With Uncharted Territory. Here's to many, many more. And hopefully we'll have a couple of those guys on the show soon, because we've got a topic that we're just itching to discuss. We'll follow up on kind of one of the questions that was in our promoter mailbag a little while back. Of course, shout out to Grant over at the Phil Singer Games Fan Podcast as well. You know, always great content, just so well done, so well put together. I think that guy does something, you know, in the entertainment field. I don't know. He's got some production skills.
I love the way he just breaks down. He gives you, I mean, we expand on things a lot here, you know, but he just gives you exactly what you need. Like if you have like, you know, 10, 15 minutes, he gives you everything you possibly need. And then he throws a match in there too. I mean, this week did use the death match rules in a match between Splatter and was it Slaughterhouse? Yeah, one of the guys from the 80s Mania Wrestling, the Freddy Krueger, Jason Voorhees mashup guy there, who won the title now too. So, I love what he does over there. And of course, yeah, the Uncharted Territories guys, you know, 1 year. I just remember a year ago them announcing that. I was like, oh, that's so cool. And just, you know, seeing how, you know, what great stuff that they've done this year and, you know, doing things like, you're breaking down all these old sets, bringing Mark Ashby back into the fold of things there has been great. And yeah, just all the just wonderful conversation that they've had. And yeah, look forward to hopefully seeing all those guys in person next summer. So that should be great.
Yes, absolutely. I can't wait to shake some hands and get some FaceTime. Not FaceTime as in, you know, over the computer or the phone, but real FaceTime with them. Also, shout out to Lee with Dizzy Dice. He has returned with a new episode just recently dropped. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, unfortunately, but I'm really looking forward to that.
I think he might be a little bit more regular with it in the future, too, is what he told me. He's just recently moved and is now set up to do some more of that. So, yeah, great to hear from Lee.
Yeah. And of course, just a shout out to all the wonderful promoters that make this whole thing, you know, work and go around, you know, without your passion, creativity and input, you know, it doesn't mean nearly as much. And it's like the conversation we had last week with Pariah, the fact that we get to share stuff and, you know, that sense of community that's been built. You know, for 30 plus years is pretty incredible. And I think that, you know, there is no doubt in my mind for me personally, I have never felt more a member of this community than I have in the past, you know, year and a half. And I've been playing the game now for 27 years. So, and to think that, you know, 27 years later, I'm sitting here and, you know, doing this podcast and having the opportunity to participate in the virtual cons and, you know, do some work with the company is just, it's just awesome. And, you know, Rob kind of hit the nail on the head. It's like, it really is kind of a dream, you know, to be able to like, to, you know, work with the people you love doing something you love. Like, it's just like, it's great. So, it's such an awesome experience to be a member of the community. And I'm grateful for each and every one of you that are listening to this, because, you know, if you're not listening, then we're not making a podcast.
There you go.
And we'll be back real soon, whether we have fresh content for you or we're giving you something a little canned because I'm otherwise indisposed. We don't know yet, but we're looking forward to bringing you a lot more over the next couple of months as we journey through teaser season towards the new releases in December. Of course, Legends Expansion 8. And the Women of the Indies International Edition, and of course, FTR3.
Not those guys on AEW.
Incredible, wonderful tag team.
Yeah,
who won the AAA championship? Everything I love about professional wrestling.
You know. But before we go, I just want to give one last shout out to Brock Atkinson and his Brockster Builds Twitch channel. He is doing a second episode now, where I think every week he's picking a Legends and Indies and a Champions match to play out. I think a lot more digestible. I know he's been playing at his New Dimensions Wrestling, which sometimes is really cool, but, you know, sometimes it's been taking, you know, some long time, but he's looking to do a quick hit thing on his Twitch channel, and he will be having a giveaway soon. I saw the stats and the artwork for the giveaway card he's working on, and it's pretty sweet. So,
nice.
I just want to give one more shout out before we signed off here to him. Yes. So definitely check it out. If you never checked out Twitch before, I think Brock was kind of going to post some stuff on the boards about, you know, how to get onto that, but it's definitely really cool kind of watching, you know, live video and interacting and whatnot in real time. And then you can even kind of watch back, I think, some things as well, but definitely check him out. And thanks, Brock, for jumping in to all this fun as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad you mentioned that. It was a heck of a lot of fun having him on the podcast a little while back and you know, talking about everything that he's been doing. So, you know, definitely check that out. But in the meantime, Mike Molesky, where are you? No, I'm just kidding. He was busy this week. We hope to have him back riding with us real soon. But you got anything else for me, Todd?
No, I think we're good to sign off right now. So yeah, thanks for everybody who came out to the con this weekend. It was definitely a lot of fun. Got some great feedback. Let us know what you liked. If you liked the Austin Idol, if you want to have more guests on in the future, I think probably people did like that. So, and we have I actually have someone in mind for the January con as well. That kind of fits into what we might be planning for then. So, more on that to come. Probably, you know, towards the, you know, end of the year, we'll have a little bit more details on that. But yeah, really looking forward to we're starting off this next part of teaser season here, as we say, into the big holiday releases. Can't wait.
Yeah. And of course, one final shout out, last but certainly not least, to Tom Filsinger himself, who joined us as the both the Dark Menace and himself on Sunday. It's always wonderful to see Tom and hear from Tom. And I'm you know, just grateful that we get to kind of play in this sandbox that he has created. And, you know, it's interesting as we're going through and talking about all of these matches and these the ringside companions, it's sort of like he did that, you know?
Yeah, he did that.
You know, almost all of them. I think that there's a couple in there that maybe, you know, other people might have suggested or had a hand in or something like that. But for the most part, you know, that's all Tom. So, so we're grateful for him and for, you know, all that, we get to do as a result of the game that he created, you know, 30 plus years ago. So in the meantime, take care of yourselves, take care of one another, hit us up on the message boards, let us know what you think. Feel free to send us your hate mail. That's fine too. We might read it aloud on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, let's get some good of that next time.
Yeah. You know, yeah, why not? You know, it's like Jimmy Fallon does that sometimes with celebrities, and we'll do it here. Like, I'll read my hate mail live, you know. I've got experience with monologues. I'll cry a little. I don't care. and thank you all so much. Take care, and we'll talk to you again real soon.